When looking for the King of Podcasts, you're at the wrong channel.
Well, excuse me!
Looking for good ideas for life? You're far from good hands.
Hey, bud, what's your problem?
If you think the listener is always right, you're far from the right place.
Out of order! Even in the future, nothing works!
Hosted by a Northeasterner by birth, but a rebel by choice.
Are you threatening me?
If you want a host that floats between love and madness,
and we know the night is always gonna be here anyway. Thinking of you's working up my appetite, looking forward to a little afternoon delight.
Then play on and listen to Crazy Train Radio.
All right, guys, listen to this blues riff and B. Watch me for the changes and try and keep up, okay?
Warning, creators of this game do understand the subject matter may be offensive to some, but they do honor the families and people that have been affected by these real life tragedies that these individuals have caused. Want to play a game?
Oh yeah!
Lover of true crime?
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, we got an interesting game for you to check out.
Wow.
With the mashup of influences such as horror movies, collecting cards, and RPGs.
What?
Led to giving birth to an incredible creation of this game, Killers the Card Game.
You are all my children now.
This game is a collectible trading card game featuring some of the most infamous killers with tidbits of trivia on the back of each card to help you learn some insight to each criminal.
Who the hell are you?
Let's not forget, during the game, cops will be chasing you and these criminals.
I'm a cop, you idiot!
However, check out their website listed through all social media today, which can be found under Killers the Card Game.
Am I on the internet?
I want to play a game.
Hey, my name is Tom Devlin. I'm owner and operator of Tom Devlin's Monster Museum, and I'm creator of Teddy Told Me To, and you are listening to Crazy Train Radio.
Hey folks, it's your least favorite host in the podcast world, Croc, Jonathan Steele. Boy, do we have a good one for you today.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, this is going to be take two, but it is what it is. This next guest has been a special makeup effects artist since 2001. And has provided creatures and effects for over 160 feature films, working with many actors and directors that has inspired his path. Also got a little project, and the good thing about retaping is I had a chance to watch the project, but let's say hello to Tom Devlin. Tom, how the hell are you?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Good. So for full disclosure, tried to do this in Jersey, but when I went to mix it and all that fun stuff, it was like all clusterfucked. In certain spots. Yeah. And Tom deserves more respect for that. And I certainly give myself a little more respect. Not much, but definitely Tom deserved it. So how was Jersey Horror Con for you?
overall?
Oh, it was a blast, man. I love meeting the fans, and also I met a bunch of people that you know, we've been online and corresponded before, but had never met face to face. And you know, it's always great meeting new people, and you know, everybody's like minded and shares the excitement of the horror movies and all that.
And you know, it was funny, you know, what I was telling folks with our first conversation, but also with just in general, because we met the hotel lobby, did the taping, and then it was just, we seemed to go down rabbit holes. Well, what about this? What about that? And one of the other folks I was going to be talking with on Friday of the show was sat right next to you, and Rashawn Hammond,
yeah,
who ended up being from Vegas. I didn't realize at the point that I made the introduction. Were you guys connected online beforehand, or?
No, we had never met. I obviously was a fan of Hook, and I didn't realize how much television he was in and in shows that I really liked as well. And then we hit it off pretty well, became, you know, buddies. And I just had a world premiere for my newest movie, The After Dark, on Monday, and he came out and
yeah,
he came to the premiere and the after party, and you know, we just a new friend. You know, it's pretty cool. I hope to work with him soon, and I think he's a really fun guy, super, super entertaining.
Exactly. And it was funny because, like I said, you and me were going down different rabbit holes, kind of looked at the watch and go, let's go get something to eat. And we went and got food. But I asked Rashawn if he wanted to go with us because he flew in that morning and such. But he was going to set up and stuff. But me and him were talking about when I meet at the building and stuff while still with you. And he goes, I said, just so you know, Tom's from Vegas, because you, and we'll get into it with the Monster Museum and such. He goes, oh, I spend a lot of time in Vegas. I live, you know, between LA and Vegas.
He splits his time between LA and Vegas.
He goes, oh, that's great. Then when I went to meet him at the venue, he was like, I'm like, you got to be shitting me. You guys were set up next to each other. And it was just meant to be. So
I'm a firm believer that everything happens for a reason. And I think getting to know Rashawn was one of those reasons, because I really do think that we'll work together and make some movies together. And it's cool that there's always a weird path that kind of takes you a different direction, or, you know. And I feel like the reason I showed up, one of the reasons I ended up being in New Jersey was to meet, you know, cross paths with Rashawn.
Exactly. And his girlfriend who was with him is just lovely as well. She was awesome to deal with. But for those who aren't familiar with you, that was the first time in what, 15 years or so you've been out to the East Coast? Because you're from Pennsylvania yourself.
I was born in Morristown, New Jersey, but I grew up in East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, and I left in 2000 or 99. I had come back for a couple of visits, and when I toured, Teddy told me to, through last, a year ago now, we stopped in East Stroudsburg, my hometown, and had a great screening. But as far as New Jersey goes, and like the area we were in, Edison, East Rutherford, that kind of area, I haven't been there in 23, 25 years.
Easy. And the other thing about that, too, was you told me on Sunday, because I had to come back up Sunday for some show business, and you had a chance to go visit Silent Bob's comic store. How was that for you?
Yeah, I went to the Secret Stash, and more importantly, went to the Quick Stop from Clerks, and it was pretty awesome, man. I'm a huge View Askew fan. I think without Clerks, maybe my movie career never happens the way it did. You know, like a lot of 90s teens, I was really inspired by the idea of making my own movie and not necessarily having to have a studio back it. But I just always have been a big Kevin Smith fan, and I had been to the Quick Stop before, but it was before digital cameras, so I didn't have photos or anything. So me and my buddy Tim, we went out there and took some pictures and went down to the Red Bank to the Secret Stash and walked around, and They've got some cool museum articles in the window there. It was really awesome to see like some screen use stuff and behind the scenes stills. And I don't know, the whole comic book men show, and you know, the secret stash is legendary. So it was cool. It was cool to kind of take a detour into the ISK universe. When I was a kid, we used to hang out at the Dirt Mall for Mallrats. And then it turned into a big Cineplex, like a major, huge movie theater, the whole mall, basically. And we used to go to the Menlo Park Mall that spoke about in Mallrats. Like we kind of piled around in all those areas. But as an adult, I had never been back.
Fuck, noise. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4, noise, smoking weed, doing coke, drinking beers, rolling baddies, smoking blunts, who smoked the blunts, rolling blunts and smoking.
Let me get a nickel bag.
$15, little man, put that shit in my hand. If that money doesn't show, then you owe me, oh. My jungle love, yeah, oh, we, I think I want to know ya, yeah, what?
What the hell are you singing?
Nice. Well, we'll start there because I brought it up in the intro and you just mentioned it. Teddy told me to. For those who don't have physical copies, and we'll bring that up again, but for those who don't have physical copies, you can catch it on Tubi, which is what I did. So what's the response been? You did the tour, you said, but just in general, whether they've seen it at the premiere on Tubi or they've bought the Blu-ray, what's the response been?
The response has been overwhelmingly positive for Teddy Told Me To. Of course, the theatrical screenings were incredible. Like, it was awesome to watch people just laughing at the right moments, jumping out of their seats at the right moments, you know. But we've had something like 42 reviews online, and not one of them has been like, this is a pile of shit. These filmmakers should be taken out back and shot, you know. It's every review has been very positive. You know, great cat, colorful cast, exciting makeup effects, lots of fun cameos. Now, they all state, you know, this isn't an original movie. We're not rewriting the wheel. We're not making something new. We're celebrating something old. So it's very familiar to those older 80s films like Sleepaway Camp 2, Friday the 13th Part 4, you know, things like that. It's like a traditional campy slasher film with heavy makeup effects, lots of familiar faces and tropes, and, you know, got to be a musical montage in there, like in Leprechaun when they're painting the house, and or Elvira, Mistress of the Dark, when they're working on the house. And, you know, we have a, and I end the whole movie with a fun little rap song that is about the film itself, which you would see in something like Maniac Cop 2 or, you know, the end of Ninja Turtles or something.
Would that be this original?
What's that?
Would that be this version of the Turtles?
Oh, yeah, you know it, yeah.
Because we are in the same age group, and I was going to bring that up later, but it's funny that you are a fan of the Turtles and some guy named Dolph Lundgren is.
Oh, you know it. I love He-Man. Love He-Man.
And, you know, it's funny. I'm not going to tell the full story here, but when I was out in California last year, I was at Blades Ranch, and he's up by undisclosed locations. I'm not going to spill the beans, but it's just funny when because you need a truck to get up to the top of the mountain and where he lives, because he's literally 3 miles from the average street level. He pulls up and he has a smirk. He goes, "All right, you ready to have some fun?" You know, beans, he's been in a stunt field and actor for 50 plus years. And I go, just knowing him for the several years I have, I go inside like, oh no, this can't be good. But yeah, I'm game. Let's go. No, but there's a lot of good things like that. But with Teddy Told Me To, the first thing I did was there was a nice little twist at the end and with one of the characters. And I don't want to spoil it. But first thing I did was text you. I go, that was a nice little twist. I like that, what you did with that character.
Yeah.
So,
you know, you got to set it up for the sequel, right?
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, okay, you can go that direction. I like it. Yeah. So if you get a chance, check it out on Tubi. Or is there a place to get the physical medium that you take it?
You can buy the physical media at plan10pictures.com. We have all of our physical releases available. I think there's seven movies available on there right now.
And I think we had this conversation, but what is your thoughts with the whole physical medium? Because some say it's dying, but others, as you could see, I'm an old school and need the physical medium.
I think in the mainstream world, it has died. You know, most people, it's easier to hit play on streaming. I mean, I could say I honestly own movies that I watch streaming instead of getting up and finding the disc, you know. But as far as the collectability and the interaction with the fans, I love physical media because we can sign the cover. We can give you something to take away from the experience. You can't take a 2B video away from the experience or have a signed copy, or like that interaction is not the same if you just go home and watch the movie, which you did, and it was decent for you, but you don't have that collectible that goes along with the memory, you know?
Exactly. Now, what's the process with getting up? Obviously, the structure of the business has changed, and you've been on both sides. But on the independent side, how do you get on such platforms like Amazon or Tubi or any of those?
You know, there are some easy ways. You can distribute your own movie through things like Film Hub. And they'll get them on those platforms. That's their job. But I personally wanted to build something a little bit bigger. So I took my production company, Plan 10 Pictures, and created a distribution wing out of it. And through that, I go through a company called MBD, and I had to prove myself. They have to accept what content you're delivering. And once they realize that you are the real deal, they give you a brand basically. And so through MVD, I am Plan 10 Pictures, and I can distribute just about any movie that I want as I make them or as I acquire them from other filmmakers, which I haven't done much of. I have one movie I put out that I didn't make, but that I did work on. I did the makeup effects on it. It's called Time's Up. But for the most part, I make a movie, shoot it in, you know, a couple of weeks, and then I edit the film, make sure the sound design, everything will pass QC, and then I distribute it. And I choose Tubi because Tubi is like the video store of yesteryear. You know, on Tubi, you can watch new stuff, old stuff, television shows, documentaries, and a lot of really good independent horror films. And yeah, there's commercials, but the streaming service itself is free, and we get paid every time a commercial plays, so I tell everybody, just play Teddy before you go to bed. You know, just hit play and go to bed, and we'll be making money in the middle of the night.
Absolutely. And like I said, you've been a part of the independent world, but you got your start on big budget projects such as Terminator 3, Scorpion King. And, you know, you were joking with me about working with some guy named Dwayne Johnson on the Scorpion King. And yeah. Apparently you knew somebody who knew him and whatnot.
Yeah. So my first film project was The Scorpion King. And I got to help life cast Dwayne Johnson, made some arrows that stick out of his arm and something that is in his leg. I think an arrow in his leg. And so I life casted his shoulder and bicep. And we were chatting about how I said, this is my first feature film, and he said it's his first real feature film. He had been like a CGI component of The Mummy 2, but this is his first like acting role. And the funny thing is, my cousin Corey, who I didn't realize was Dwayne's roommate in college football in Canada. They play college football in Canada together. And had I known that then, I would have dropped Corey's name and been like, oh yeah, you know my cousin. But I had no idea until he's much older than me. So I didn't know until after I told my story of working with The Rock at a little family gathering. And he's like, oh, yeah, I was roommates with him.
Yeah, and it was funny. The guys from Grimm, who are on YouTube and such, was bullshit with us there because it was during our post-bullshit session. And there's a funny story I'm not going to tell about maybe finding piss-stained mattresses because they paid you in Canadian up there, but... yeah, they're, it's just a, you know, they would steal these mattresses to get by, you know, up there.
Just watch Young Rock. They talk about it all in Young Rock.
Yeah, exactly. I know the non-PG version, but that we'll leave that be. But what do you think is the toughest part going from big budget projects to finding yourself in the happier in a certain aspect of the independent world?
Yeah, I don't know. I think the biggest struggle is the lack of financial stability. Like, when you're on a big budget, and when you're working at the big shops that get work coming pretty frequently, if there's a dry spell, you just go on unemployment, and then you come back in when the movies are going. You know, it's kind of a, it's not looked down upon. Like, that's what unemployment is for at those shops, so they don't lose their employees. So you kind of get some breaks sometimes that are like paid vacation. But the thing is I never moved to Hollywood to make a lot of money. I went there because I wanted to work on movies like Puppet Master and Toxic Avenger and things like that. So going from the big budget to the smaller budget, I didn't make less money. I just had to hustle a lot more. It was a lot harder to keep the work than it was on, you know, when you're somebody's employee.
Exactly. And I guess that work was Full Moon Productions, correct? When you first made the jump.
Yeah, I didn't start with Full Moon. I tried and tried and tried to get to Full Moon. I started on a film called Joshua. It was an independent film by a production company called Drexel Box. And we shot that in Indiana in 2002. Joshua was really my first movie. And then from that, I jumped right on another project that ended up falling apart and they never paid me. And then I got on a thing called The Storyteller with a guy named Andrew Getty. That film eventually came out. They retitled it The Evil Within with Michael Berryman and Sean Patrick Flannery, Dina Meyer. And I worked on that for like 6 months at Andrew Getty's garage, just building the monsters to shoot. I was one of many effects artists that had taken on the job. Andrew was a little bit crazy. He's passed away now. And if he hadn't passed away, I don't know if the movie ever would have come out because he would never stop working on it. He was kind of like Howard Hughes. He was a real eccentric gentleman. And then I went and worked at the Asylum for years. I did a lot of Asylum movies. Probably, I don't know, more than 10 Asylum movies. And then from the Asylum, I ended up getting a job at Full Moon eventually. And that was through a friend named John Lechago, who I'd done a bunch of independent films for as a director. He was a director that I worked with a lot, and he got the opportunity to direct Killjoy 3. And when he got Killjoy 3, he insisted that I be on the project. And we went to China and filmed Killer Clowns in China. It was amazing. And I stayed with Full Moon for like, I don't know, several years, a lot of years. I've done probably 14 movies with them.
Now, and I know we did have this part with the conversation, but you had an opportunity, I think it was as a teen, to meet Tom Savini. So, and obviously now he has the school, but you didn't personally go to school per se, but how would you tell people now? Because I know you tried to open a school before COVID and stuff. So how would you tell people to learn the process?
When I met Tom Savini, he didn't have school yet. And I was like a kid. I was like 15 or 16. And he told me to pack up my stuff, go to Hollywood, and go to a school called Joe Blasco's Makeup Center West. And that's exactly what I did. And when I went to the makeup school, I took the beauty makeup and the character makeup and the hair and stuff. But there was no special effects or makeup effects at the time. They didn't have, I had to take the beauty class first. By the time I was done with the beauty class, which was like 11 weeks, then the makeup effects class didn't have enough people signed up, so they didn't have a class ready. And that's how I got that job that ended up on Scorpion King. They gave me an internship at a shop called WM Creations. And WM Creations was owned by a man named Matthew Mungall, who had won Academy Awards for Bram Stoker's Dracula. He had worked on everything. The Guardian, he worked on Edward Scissorhands. I mean, he had worked on everything, literally. And my first job was on X-Files. And I started as an intern. And about 2 weeks later, he offered me a full-time job, getting paid. Not a lot, but, you know, I stayed there for 2 years. But when the school finally called me back and said, oh, we have spots open for the makeup school, I was like, I'm on the back lot of Fox working on X-Files. Like, I'm not going back to school. Like, I got where I needed to be. So what I take away from that is the schooling really helps connect you with the right people. But right now, there's so many resources online. There's so much stuff out there. I don't know how you can't, start honing your craft with online seminars or YouTube videos, and then build a portfolio and just hit the ground running. You know, I didn't have Instagram or TikTok or Facebook where you could connect with, like right now you can message somebody like Howard Berger or myself or Tom Savini, and they read their own messages. Like, they don't have an assistant that's reading those messages. So if they see what they like, or, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the job, or whatever that, you know, the squeaky gear gets the oil, or however that saying is.
Yeah.
I really just pounded the pavement until I made a career. And I think you can do that now without school. I did open a makeup school, and I love teaching. I love seeing people grow and get excited about things. I just didn't want to commit my 9 to 5 days a week to teaching others instead of doing myself. So as soon as the world opened back up, we did one movie with the school where I brought students on set, and then I kind of wrapped it up and got back to work.
Nice. Now, obviously, people know you from reality show Face Off, but I should say you have 1313 Effects as well, besides the production company. But obviously, the character of Teddy from Teddy Told Me To was first kind of designed on that show. So would you say it's a blessing or a curse with something like that?
Oh, definitely a blessing. Like, I was on Face Off 13 years ago, and I talk about Face Off every day. Every single day, somebody asks me about Face Off at the Monster Museum or at a convention or wherever I'm at. Even in public. I mean, it's pretty awesome. And one of my proudest moments was creating this character called Teddy Told Me To, and Sean Cunningham was the guest judge. Of course, he created Friday the 13th, and he really thought the character was excellent, and V. Neil thought the character was excellent, and it ended up winning that episode. But more than that, the fans thought that character was excellent. I had several people cosplay that character and, you know, send me fan mail with their little kids dressed up like that. And so when it came time for me to direct my first feature film, it only made sense to tap into this character that already had a fan following.
So, but you did make some slight changes to what we see in a movie compared to what was on the show, correct? Was that for legal reason?
Definitely made some changes. And there's some lore spots that will be revealed if we ever make, there's two sequels to follow it, hopefully. And eventually he will show up appearing like he did in the game show. But the Face Off was a prosthetics makeup reality show on the Sci-Fi Channel. The Sci-Fi Channel then sold to Universal at one point, and then NBC bought Universal. So when we made the movie, even as small as it is, I was a little bit nervous that NBC would come after us for likeness rights, because we signed away our life when we were on that show, you know? So for my film, I made him an older man, and he's got a beard and stuff, and he looks real creepy, and he had this massive forehead with veins in it that was real. There was makeup. I felt okay replicating the costume and the bear mask, without any prosthetic makeups, because the show that owned the character for some time was a prosthetic makeup show. And we've made it this far now without ever any kind of a cease and desist or even a word from Sci-Fi Channel or NBC, that in the sequels, I don't want to spoil the movie, but it's not really a spoiler. They talk about a certain place burning down, and it would make sense in the sequel if we see Teddy come back all burned up the way he kind of was in Face Off.
Absolutely. And speaking of, I know because you have a couple projects besides Teddy Told Me To, but how stressful is it with the financing for it without, because I know we talked about Indiegogo and things like that, and you're not, how's that for you? Because there obviously there's a lot of crowdfunding, but also in general, indie horror, there's a lot of tricky financing.
Yes. So I don't personally use crowdfunding to fund my movies. I prefer to find an outside investor that's really, maybe in the future, we'll be working together that way because they like what I'm doing. And that I like to make a personal relationship, and I like to work with one or two limited amount of investors rather than Indiegogo, where it's a world of investors and you feel the weight of that on your shoulders to get everything done. And I mean, I always have the goal to complete it and to get it out there and to make my money back, but making your money back is harder these days. So I prefer to work with my own finances or an outside investor. And it's not really stressful. It's just problem solving. Like, you just have to kind of figure out what we can do for what amount of money and be realistic with ourselves, you know? And sometimes, like, I could say that I've made most of Teddy's budget back by selling physical media. I can't say that'll be the same for Las Vegas Frankenstein or for The After Dark. I don't know, you know, but I do know that Teddy hit pretty good. And I believe The After Dark, my newest movie, is going to surpass it because it has some major fanfare. And, you know.
Right on. And that's what it's all about. But obviously we've mentioned the Monster Museum, which is what, 15, 20 minutes north of actually the city?
Yeah, right off the strip. It is about 15 to 20 minutes in Boulder City, right by the Hoover Dam. It is a place that I built, kind of just a place to store some of my stuff. But it's become like a mecca for horror fans. It's our goal is to preserve the art and history of practical effects. Everything within the museum, for the most part, I created. And some of it is screen used props like the puppets from Puppet Master or Killjoy. And some of it is recreations of classic characters that are super important in the industry, such as Frankenstein, Freddy Krueger, things like that.
Absolutely. And you also said, well, I think two things with that being the mecca for horror fans to make the trek out there if they're in the area. Would you say that was because of YouTube and things like that, people doing shows on that?
The YouTubers are our biggest lifeblood. I can definitely say Justin Scar, Jacob the Carpetbagger, Grim Life Collective, Jordan the Lion, Adam the Woo. These people put commercials directly to our consumers. We help them by getting them views. They help us by getting eyes on our place. And people like Justin and Jacob come back several times over the years, and people see how much and how often it changes. And it really does. It really helps drive business forward.
You know, that's the thing, because with all the changes and such, it was COVID, as bad as it was for a lot of people, it was almost like a blessing in disguise for you to allow you to change things up, right?
It was 100% a blessing in disguise. That, like, the day we had to close our doors, I didn't go home. I went to Lowe's like 16 hours before we closed our doors, spent every dollar in my account on building materials. And then I jumped into the museum and just started rehauling the whole place. And it really did help. And then those YouTube videos that had already been made, people were discovering it while they were stuck on their couch. So when we reopened the doors, it was like the floodgates opened and they haven't even settled yet. You know, it's still going.
And I'll share links with that as well to check that out. But final question, and this was cool because you were showing me pictures on your phone and stuff, was doing the prosthetics for guys like Kane and Tony Todd and Warrington at conventions like we were at a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I do a lot of the convention celebrity photo ops. And it's a blast because, like, I was too young to ever work with Kane Hodder in the capacity of Jason Voorhees. I've worked with him on other movies like Ed Gein, The Butcher of Plainsfield. But to get to put him back in his original, you know, Part 7 or Jason Goes to Hell costume, we've done Uber Jason. We've done every Jason Kane's ever played. I made Warrington's costumes. I made Tony Todd's costume. I helped out a little bit with CJ Graham's costume. Kind of become celebrity costumer for these photo ops and thoroughly enjoy it. I've done a couple for Damien Parfait.
But, you know, how close would you say you were with the costumes that you make for the conventions and stuff? Actually, 100% authentic to...
I make the costumes as absolutely authentic as I can get. And they're pretty darn close. In one instance, we actually did for Mad Monster, we made Kane Hodder's Jason Part 7 costume, originally created by John Buechler. We used several of the screen used pieces or pieces pulled from screen used molds to recreate what we were doing. So, like, I mean, it's as close as he'll ever get to the original.
Nice. So, obviously, what's next for you?
Well, we just premiered my movie, The After Dark. The After Dark will hit Tubi sometime around July 9th.
Brain Gale for the wrestling fans and get a couple folks from the wrestling business in it.
It's got Gangrel, David Heath. It's got Paul London, Sin Bodhi. It's punk rocker legend Lars Fredriksson. Some great up-and-comers, Ashley Ballou and Dan Saxton. I mean, it's a killer movie. We just had a huge party out here in Vegas at the Palms Casino, and it was just so much fun. It's overwhelming still to think about how we sold out the whole, you know, it was like 150 seats and biggest theater screen I've ever seen, I think, and it was amazing. So when that film comes out, we're really banking on the wrestling fandom, the punk rock fandom, and the horror fandom coming together as one. You know?
Absolutely. Like I said, I'll share links to the Monster Museum and everything else. Tom, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Hey there, Friday fans. We know how much you enjoy the movies. Enjoy grabbing your Friday merchandise and interacting with the Friday family, whether it be at conventions or during our particular watch-alongs. Well, when you're looking to get yourself masks, why not check out our friends over at Camp Blood Customs out of New York State and order your specific custom mask from any of the films. All orders are made specifically. Your needs and wants are. Make sure you find Camp Blood Customs on Facebook, Instagram, and all over social media and order yours today.
This is Howard Berger from K&B Effects Group, Inc., and you are listening to Crazy Train Radio.